You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where we break down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm joined, as always, by David Ramil. After leading by 12 points in the second quarter, the Heat fell apart, giving up 43 points to the Kings in the third quarter, ultimately losing 123 to 113 and falling to 3-3 on the season. Obviously a tough loss for the Heat. But I think Sacramento's speed just got the better of them tonight, David.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think we have to acknowledge the fact that Sacramento may not be as bad as they've been in the past. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is that they did over the offseason, while they were largely ridiculed for it, seems to be working, at least so far in the season. They could collapse by mid-November and we'll forget that this hot start ever, you know, began the way it did. But I think you're getting some real good contributions at the center position from Bielitsa. You're seeing De'Aaron Fox take his game to another level mm-hmm. in his second year. You're getting some nice contributions from other players. Buddy Hield looked particularly sharp against Miami. Maybe it was just the kind of spacing that we'll talk about later in the show, but he really seemed like he had a lot of open shots that he was knocking those down, something he wasn't able to do earlier in his career. So I think the Kings are better than a lot of people expected. You know, they might still be a laughing stock as far as how their front office is managed and things of that sort, but the product on the floor is improving. And, you know, that's something that we were, you know, obviously was evident tonight against Miami. But as far as the pace is concerned...
Well, wait, about the Kings, I think there are hints there of last year's Orlando Magic. Do you remember when the Magic started off hot? Wait, are the Magic kind of good? And then it was like, no, they're not.
I wrote about it, and especially Nikola Vucevic, who was shooting like 70% from three-point range.
Yeah, he's the Bielitsa this year. There's like, it's very similar for what the Kings have going with Bielitsa. Now, Bielitsa is a more proven three-point shooter than Vucevic is. But I think there's still questions about how they defend the paint. They're obviously young, but you're right. Look, De'Aaron Fox obviously has made a leap between years one and two. Buddy Hield, after getting traded from New Orleans in the Boogie deal, finally seems to be finding his footing in Sacramento. And look, Buddy Hield was a guy in his rookie season who was basically like, it was a toss-up between him and Jamal Murray. And a lot of people picked Jamal Murray going into this season to have a breakout year for Denver. And rightly so, but, you know, we've kind of forgotten about Buddy Hield since he got traded to the Kings, and I think he's been a really good player for them all season long. Started coming on strong at the end of last season, actually, for them. So, look, I don't know if Sacramento's quote-unquote real or not real, but they play really, really fast, and I think that's going to be a major part. They traded away a bunch of veterans, so Dave Yeager can't kind of go back to his worst habits and just lean on washed veterans. You know, they traded the likes of, like, Garrett Temple and George Hill and those guys. And so I think it's forced Yeager to play these young guys more, and they like to get up and down the court. They like to play fast and make it a full court game, which is where they have been thriving this season. And Miami just can't keep up. They're a slow the pace team. They're playing two bigs like Whiteside and Olynyk. We saw them as early as the preseason struggle to get out in transition. It's especially on the defensive end, and I think the Kings just pounced on that.
It looked like Miami was, you know, at first able to keep up with the pace. They seemed like they were ready for the challenge. They got off to that big lead. But even then, you started to see that there were signs of weaknesses there.
It wore them down.
Especially, the turnovers in particular were an egregious error on Miami's part. And they were just playing sloppy. It seemed like they were playing to their competition rather than establishing or imprinting their own personality. It might be that Miami just doesn't have that stronger personality where they could control that. And even a lot of people suggested this, and I think even John Crotty did so in the broadcast, for a team that was as fast-paced as Sacramento, for Miami, who is, as you pointed out, a slower-the-paced team, why not just feed the ball into Hassan Whiteside, see what he can do with the ball, and then kind of force the shot clock to grind down a little bit and get things more to your side of things, where the style of play that you prefer, rather than having these jacked up threes that were missing more often than not, initiating a fast break opportunity for Sacramento, and then having Miami be unable to compensate defensively. There were just far too many switches where they were trying to compensate in this transition fast break offense. It just wasn't working for Miami. It led to these open 3-point shots, or conversely, shots at the rim. They finished with 68 points in the paint. Yeah. Absolutely blew Miami Miami out of the water in that regard. And so they were just, Miami just didn't have an answer for them. And even when it seemed like they were going to be able to come back at some points in the second half, just weren't able to. Sacramento all of a sudden ignited another small run, just enough to keep Miami at bay. And it just, although the deficit was 10 points, never really felt that close in the second half.
Kept kind of getting it to that 10 point, and then they would, or even 9 or 8 points, and then Sacramento would hit a three or two, and then it would go back to 12 or 14 or 13 points. But to go back to the Whiteside point, the reason you don't feed Whiteside to slow the game down is, you're going to slow the game down because Whiteside's just going to dribble it into a turnover. That's why you don't do it. Because it's just going to lead to other fast break points. And even, look, Sacramento was getting out in transition after Miami Heat makes. Like, it wasn't just, look, we'll talk about all the three-point shooting that they did and stuff like that a little bit later when we get to our Twitter questions. But it wasn't just jacking up a bunch of threes that resulted in all these fast breaks. Like I said, the Kings they're getting out into transition, just beating the Heat down the floor after makes, just after inbounds. And so that's the problem. And that's the problem when you play two bigs. Miami doesn't really have that personality, like you said. They went into this game, Spoelstra talked about right before the game, hey, we're just going to be the best rebounding team in the league. And I even tweeted this. I was like, hey, like, I hate rebounding teams. I am like famously or infamously, depending on your perspective, anti-rebounds. I would rather get out and get back on defense as opposed to chase any rebound. But if you're going to, like, if you're the Heat and you don't really have the opportunity to be the best at anything other than just being the best rebounding team in the league, go for it. Just, like, hang your hat on that. Be the best rebounding team in the league. The problem is, the reason people have ditched basically rebounding is because it hurts you so bad in transition, and chasing a rebound isn't as valuable as basically just giving up easy points on the other end. And so, you know what? I take back my tweet. I don't want to be the best. I would rather be the worst rebounding team in the league than the best rebounding team in the league. And you know what? The Heat won two championships being basically the worst rebounding team in the league. Granted, they had Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and Chris Bosh, but still. I just... You mentioned not having the personality. You know who does have a strong personality?
Who's that?
Jimmy Butler. And I don't want to keep going back to this, but I...
That shout out to the end there. I mean, for our fans that didn't get a chance to watch the Minnesota versus Lakers game, it was a tight game towards the end there. And then with the shot clock winding down on the defensive end, Jimmy absolutely smothered LeBron James, forced a turn, not a turnover, but forced a pass into a bad shot by Brandon Ingram, I believe. And then on the other end, again, with the shot clock winding down, with a two-point lead, just drills a three-pointer, calm as can be. It was absolutely the kind of thing that we haven't seen in Miami for a while there. And that's since LeBron.
And Josh Richardson, the guy who was in the center of all these the Jimmy Butler rumors, had 31 points on a really efficient night. He's been playing career high, and he's been playing really efficient basketball ever since he kind of wasn't, right? And people started to notice he wasn't. So give him credit. It's not Richardson's fault that the Heat lost tonight, but it would really help to have, like you said, an identity, something that you some one player that you build your offense around and build your defense around. Because even Josh Richardson isn't that. Because even Josh Richardson doesn't collapse the defense. He's making a lot of difficult shots right now, and that's how he's scoring. But he's not necessarily collapsing the defense. He's not necessarily the center of an offense. And so I think the Heat they lack that identity. But we're not breaking any news here right now. Look, also not breaking news, we've told you about this before, but the Locked On Podcast Network has started a new Twitter and Instagram feed. It's called @LockedOnNBAnet. Really, really cool stuff on Twitter. It basically just takes all of the Locked On local experts and puts them in one Twitter feed. I use TweetDeck. What I did is I just made one whole TweetDeck list for the Locked On NBAnet Twitter feed, and so it just populates that list with everything that's going around in the NBA from all, again, the Locked On local experts. It's just a really cool thing. And then on Instagram, it's awesome. They're posting a bunch of graphics, cool videos, and their stories. Again, getting updates from around the NBA, some of the best opinions from around the NBA right there in your Instagram feed. So check it out on both Instagram and Twitter @LockedOnNBAnet. We'll talk about what went right and what went wrong. And I actually think that there were a couple of things that went really right, David, but let's take a quick break first. And we'll talk about that when we come back. You know, ever since launching the podcast, people have been asking me for advice. And usually, it's what team to bet on this week. And the truth is, I don't know who's going to win. But if you think that you know, you've got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they are the best bet this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online. Their mobile site is easy to use. Lay down some cash and win big today. I'd only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account to claim that bonus and let them know that you came from us. You play, you win, you get paid. We'll get to your Twitter questions from the game later on, but let's take a look at what went right and what went wrong tonight versus the Kings. David, since the Heat lost, let's start with what went wrong. What did go wrong?
Well, a little bit of everything, I think. Some weird rotations there. A lot of Heat fans, I think, were clamoring for either Wayne Ellington to come into the lineup there. He was healthy. He was available. Seemed like he would probably be able to play. Probably could have helped space the floor a little bit more. Maybe that would have been, you know, a kind of counterintuitive there because, you know, with his three-point shooting, it might have led to another rebound for Sacramento and then potentially another fast break opportunity. But with them in this kind of deficit towards, especially in the waning moments of the game, why not insert Ellington in there, get him a little playing time, see if he can get his feet wet and maybe even help Miami close the gap a little bit more. I'd say those rotations were questionable. And there was some really bad play. Rodney Magruder played 32 minutes, finished with just 7 points, as well as Magruder's been playing of late, kind of came back down to earth a little bit, not through anything that I think Sacramento was able to do, to be 100%.
I thought it was Sacramento's length, because what Magruder has thrived on is like crashing the glass, getting those offensive rebounds, creating second chance points, finishing in traffic even this season. And Sacramento is just so long. I mean, they're playing Bjelica 33 minutes, Willie Cauley-Stein 34 minutes, who just had an awesome game. Bagley came in for 17 effective minutes, I thought. They played Kufos. You got a guy like Jarrett Jackson, Amon Shumpert. There's so much, yeah, so much length on that team that I thought that really hurt.
With Magruder, you know, look, 3 of 8, it wasn't like he was trying to be overly productive. He didn't take a lot of shots, didn't have a lot of opportunity. He did have 6 assists. But I wonder if it's one of the things that I've talked about before is now he's starting to appear on scouting reports around the league, and maybe the secret's out, and maybe they'll start to guard him a little bit more closely. And if this is an indicator of what might happen, that's not a good thing for Rodney or the Heat.
I had questions about how the Heat would guard Sacramento's front court, Bjelica playing and Willie Cauley-Stein playing the center and forward positions for them.
Not well.
And it wasn't like you said before at the top of the show, like it started off well and then it kind of just didn't anymore. I thought Kelly Olynyk really struggled getting out and onto the perimeter. Willie Cauley-Stein kept beating them down in transition. Willie Cauley-Stein is one of these guys where he loves to run the floor and get out and get lobs and do those things.
He's fast.
And he's really fast for his position, and he just torched Whiteside. I thought Whiteside had a pretty effective game, but torched Whiteside and the entire Heat defense in transition, and that was a problem for them. And I think that's ultimately why you saw Bam get 19 minutes and most of those minutes coming in the second half, because I think Bam just gets down the floor better than any of the other Miami bigs. And so you saw that and a lot of small ball with Justice Winslow at the four and things like that. I thought the Heat missed James Johnson tonight probably more than any other game this season. But to me, it goes back to the turnovers. I mean, when you have 19 turnovers in the game, compared to just 12 for Sacramento, and by the way, Sacramento didn't have 12 for most of the game. They had less than 10 for most of the game. I thought a lot of that kind of came towards the end when they stopped trying. I mean, the Kings just, like, it's amazing, but the Kings looked like the more in-control team. Like, it's incredible that we're saying that about that team, but they just did, and the Heat just kept. And look, the Heat, they committed 4 turnovers in the first 2 minutes, which, okay, so take those out.
15 for the game.
15 for the game, right?
So still too many.
Still too many. Not as bad. You want to be more in that 12 to 13 range, right where Sacramento was. But ultimately, like, the game just started sloppy and was sloppy for most of the game, save for like one run in the beginning of the second quarter.
Yeah.
So what went right for you?
Not much. It's hard to kind of focus on anything positive there. I guess I could point out to Goran Dragic finishing the game with 20 points. Didn't feel like a loud 20-point production there. Kind of a quiet game for him, but it was able to keep Miami in it for most of the night. Finished 7 of 15 from the floor, 4 of 8 from three-point range. Hit both of his free throw attempts, also had five assists. So not a great night for Goran, but, you know, we saw him have a huge night against Portland, and he's had moments where he kind of falls off the following game. He's not exactly the consistent type go-to scorer, but for Goran to finish with 20 points, I think that was a pretty strong sign that maybe he's willing to take on that role as the team's second best player, perhaps behind Josh Richardson. And he, I think he did a pretty good job overall. What did you find positive about the performance?
You know, I thought despite the shaky start, I actually liked what I saw. I liked maybe 80 to 85. Let's keep it at 80% of what I saw from Hassan Whiteside. There was he had 16 points on 10 shots, 7 of 10 from the floor altogether, which was, you know, when I looked at the box score after, I was actually surprised to see he shot 70% because he had several bad. Yeah, especially in the first half, had those push shots, had those long hook shots that you just like, what are you doing?
Oh, what was up with that floater at the top of the at the free throw line?
Like, that was awful.
It was like midway through the shot clock, too. No reason to do it. Cauley-Stein was giving him some space, and all of a sudden he decides to put this one.
And Tyler Johnson was coming around a screen to come around the other way. It looked like that the dribble handoff they run with Whiteside or Olynyk or Bam like 100 times a game, and he's like, "Nope, taking this one." I'm like, what are you doing? Why did you do that? I slapped my head. I was watching. I literally facepalmed. But had 24 rebounds, which is a season high, 5 blocks, but did commit 6 turnovers. But again, take 3 of those turnovers that he had in the first minute and 30 seconds. And
there was another one later on in the game that was charged to him where they couldn't get him the ball and they tried forcing it into him. He was charged with a turnover. It really wasn't his fault.
But yeah, it didn't seem like he even had his ball in the hands there because I think it was Willie Cauley-Stein that slapped it away. I don't know why he got charged for that.
Now, as far as the rebound is concerned, do you get the feeling that maybe he's stat padding a little bit?
Yeah, he keeps – I mean, so he had 24 rebounds tonight. I'd say 5 or 6 of them he yanked away from teammates. Like, that's the Whiteside special, especially poor Kelly Olynyk. Kelly Olynyk had 2 rebounds tonight. Kelly Olynyk, look at his rebounding numbers. They're down. That's because he's playing a lot of his minutes next to Whiteside, and because Whiteside keeps yanking rebounds away from Kelly Olynyk, poor guy.
He's going to catch an elbow to the face, too, because he keeps trying to go up for that board, and Whiteside clears out with those elbows, and he takes up so much space, he's going to totally elbow Olynyk in the face.
But that said, I thought Whiteside, he did the best he could, right? I mean, we talked about how they can't get out. He struggled to get out in transition, especially against Willie Cauley-Stein. He's not built to do that. Willie Cauley-Stein is a lean, you know, deer-like center. He just has those long gazelle strides that get him down the court. Whiteside is a big plodding center of another time who is, to his credit, doing the best he can in today's NBA. So I liked what we saw from him. I loved Josh Richardson's game tonight. Really efficient scoring. We've already talked about it, but to me, those were, if you're trying to take two silver linings away from the game, it was Josh Richardson just stepping up, 31 points on 21 shots, making all 7 of his free throws. Getting 7 free throws for Josh Richardson is right where you need him to be. I mean, we have the Jimmy Butler conversation all the time. Jimmy Butler averages 7 free throws a game. So that's right, literally where you want him to be. So I wish he would have had an assist. Didn't have any assists in the game. That's the big difference. Once he starts getting 4 to 5 assists a game, getting to the line 7 or 8 times a game, and scoring between 25 and 31 points a game, boom, that's a superstar player. So it's a lot to ask for, but, you know, the more free throws, more points, comes at the expense of basically not facilitating whatsoever. So there's that. A lot of people wondered why Wayne Ellington didn't play tonight. We'll talk about that, but let's take a quick break. Let's go to your Twitter questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. This one comes from Jeff, who asks, can you make me feel okay about playing Tyler Johnson over Wayne Ellington in a lineup that already has Dwayne Wade, Justice Winslow, and Bam Adebayo as non-spacers? David, I'm going to answer this really quick. No, I can't.
Yeah.
I'll try. I will try. There was a lot of complaints about Tyler Johnson's playing time in this game. Played 25 minutes. He had the best plus-minus of any Heat player tonight. He was a plus 10. That's why he was in the game late instead of Wayne Ellington. Could Spo have subbed somebody else in or subbed somebody else out for Wayne Ellington? 100%, and I think he should have, especially in that third quarter where Miami couldn't make a shot. They had one of those long scoring droughts that they tend to have that Wayne Ellington tends to get them out of and Spo never went to Ellington. I thought that's when they needed him, was the third quarter, not necessarily even the fourth quarter. But Tyler Johnson had a good game. So if you're going to complain about Tyler Johnson, he competed like heck on the defensive end, did enough on the offensive end as far as, you know, getting to the rim and collapsing the defense. I thought Tyler Johnson had his best game of the season. That's objective. That's a fact. Loved what I saw from him, but Ellington probably should have been out there at some point.
If you're going to be subjective about Tyler Johnson, look, just go back to what it is that you liked about him in the first place when he first joined Miami, and that's what you saw on display tonight against Sacramento. He was hustling out there. He was compensating for his lack of size. He was doing everything he could. I think when the game started getting a little bit close, I saw some real positive impact from Tyler, where he was anticipating passes, going into passing lanes, trying to do what he could to, you know, lead to turnovers and that would initiate a fast break in Miami's favor. And he was doing all these little things. He was running out in the fast break. He finished with a nice layup, extending over. I think it was over Hield at one point there, or it might have been over Shumpert. But either way, he was just finishing at the rim too. It's a good effort game. The problem is that everybody views him through this unfortunate lens of the contract. But if you just look at him being the player, he's not bad. You know, he makes some impact.
Well, he is bad sometimes. Great. Like, he has been bad all season until tonight.
Tonight was not a bad game. If you're going to focus on Johnson as problematic, tonight's not the game to do so, because I think it was overall, as his plus-minus shows, a good impact from him.
And at 4 assists, 1 turnover, that's what he does. He takes care of the ball. You know, having that differential being 2 steals, like you said, jumping those passing lanes, anticipating those things. And on a game where Miami was just turning the ball over like Hot Pockets, he didn't. And so you appreciate
that. Who turns over Hot Pockets? Wait a minute. Who turns over Hot Pockets?
Did I just make up another thing? Is that a dominoes in the basket situation?
It could be.
Don't you turn over a Hot Pocket in the microwave?
Hot Pockets is... And the problem is, so hot on the inside, you cram them right into your face, and then all of a sudden you burn yourself. I don't know anybody who goes, I've made this hot pocket, I'm giving it away.
You turn the hot pocket over in the microwave, do you not?
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't know. It's been a long time.
Halfway through, I don't know how long you put a hot pocket in the microwave. It's been years. But you have to turn it over halfway through? There's things like that. I don't know.
Oh, you follow the directions, do you, sir? I'm sorry.
Sorry, I want to make my hot pocket the right way.
Following instructions is for losers. Everybody knows that.
Let's go to Claudia's question, who asks, on a night like this, with the threes not falling, why not drive to the basket and pick up more fouls? Constantly taking shots from downtown early in the shot clock, played right into the Kings game. Whose fault is it, Spo or the players? David, you referenced this strategy at the top of the show. Look, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's fine. I have no problem with the 39 three-pointers that they took. Again, I've talked about this before on the show. The Heat are going to need to take a whole bunch of threes if they're going to score points this season, because otherwise they can't. Otherwise, they don't have the player. Like, we could say all day, they should get to the rim and get to the line, but they don't have guys that do that consistently. They just don't. Roddy Magruder, as much as he's improved putting the ball on the floor, isn't a guy that gets to the free throw line. He just tends to...
Goran, there's Josh.
Yeah. Goran Dragic doesn't do it. Josh Richardson did do it tonight, but typically does not. Dwayne Wade only is not that player anymore. He's settling for a whole bunch of threes nowadays, probably because his body's breaking down. But I didn't see that as an option for them, and I'm fine with it. Look, you're going to have the nights where you go 13 of 39 and shoot 33% from 3-point range. You're going to have those nights, but then you're going to have nights like you did in Portland where the 3-pointer wins you the game. So, or against Portland, I just say, wins you the game. So I'm fine with it. I don't know. What about you?
No, I am too. I mean, look, Olynyk 1 of 5, Magruder 1 of 4, Winslow 0 of 2, Tyler Johnson 1 of 5. I mean, that's just... That's really, really bad there. That's what is that? 3 of 9, 11, 16. 3 of 16. That's horrific. I mean, that's part of why they went 13 of 39. Mm-hmm. You get 4 more out of those spread out amongst those 4 players, just 1 more from each, and it's not necessarily as egregious. So the 3-point shooting isn't the problem. I think ideally we're used to thinking that, you know, driving to the lane is what creates good offense. That's not necessarily the case. Obviously, you just need better shooters. We had a bad shooting night. I don't think it was necessarily as a result of anything that Sacramento did. And you talked about their length, but that was more impacting, I think, shots at the paint, which is why they had the so many more points in the paint than Miami did, not just because of their transition, but because of their overall length, etc. And as far as whether or not it's Spo's or the players' fault, it's absolutely the players. I mean, I think they're choosing to take those shots.
No.
And I think
Spo is encouraging to take those shots. It's absolutely Spo's fault if you're gonna and credit.
Fault?
It's his credit. It's his blame. It's his decision. That is the system he's set up. How many times have we heard Ellington? He should be taking 12 3-pointers a game. Olynyk should be taking 8 3-pointers a game. I mean, he is encouraging it, and I credit him for doing that because he's right. And I think you live with these kind of nights where it's just not falling, but it's absolutely Eric Spoelstra. If it was up to Kelly Olynyk, you've pointed this out on prior podcasts, he'd just dribble drive to the basket every play or fake dribble handoff or whatever. So
did it tonight, too. Mm-hmm. Even when he went 1-for-5, he still had a number of putting the ball down where he should have been shooting it instead. And passing up the wide open shot for trying to create something for others.
Last question really quick. Heat Expert tweets in, is too much depth hurting this team? Is Spo forced to spread out minutes amongst too many players? Deion and JJ aren't even back yet. Something has to give. If you give 12 players 25 minutes each, you're not giving your best players enough minutes. Look, I don't know about the 12 players 25 minutes each. I think the Heat played 9 guys tonight. Yeah, 9 guys tonight. Now maybe it gets up to 11 if you bring Waiters and JJ back. Something does have to give to answer the question. I don't know who falls out of the rotation. Ellington comes back, so right. So now we're at 12. That's a good point. Good job, Heat Expert. That's why they're expert. I don't know what gives. I don't know if you can play Tyler Johnson less. There might be, pressure from the front office to basically say you can't just bench our $19 million man. Rodney McGruder's played too well. I don't know. Is it Bam? I don't know who you play less. I have no idea who you play less.
Now, is it a problem, though? I don't know that players necessarily... Look, I mean, maybe it's an unfair comparison, but we've seen plenty of games where Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and other high-volume shooters don't need that much playing time to make a positive impact. They don't necessarily need to play a lot of minutes in order to have things, in order to put together a very productive stat line. I just think that this is, I don't think there's any one player on our roster who needs to play that much, and I think otherwise you have enough versatility, enough duplicative, skill sets among players where you don't necessarily need to play Justice Winslow a lot of minutes because you can play James Johnson a lot of minutes. You don't have to play Bam because you can play Olynyk, two bigs that can create plays for others. I think the one guy that probably is unique in that aspect, really, is Hassan Whiteside. He's the one player, I think, whose skill set isn't duplicated. And even then, there are times where he's not really an option because of his style of play. So
I think
you can get enough from everybody else.
I think you're right. And I think that's where and Spo's talked about this. I mean, I think he'll run out 10 guys in the first half or of any game, and he'll pick those 10 guys based on the matchup, the individual game. And whoever's got the hot hand ends up playing. You saw a guy like Kelly Olynyk tonight only played 16 minutes because he just wasn't playing well. He was a -9. He was 1-for-7 from the field. He wasn't really contributing rebounding. Didn't rack an assist the entire game. Wasn't his night. So he didn't play a whole lot in the second half. And then you're going to have nights where Kelly Olynyk plays the entire second half like he did against Portland, basically. So there's a hot hand factor here. And when you don't have a standout superstar, that's kind of where you're left to go if you're Eric Spoelstra. But that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. Thanks, as always, for sending in those questions via Twitter using that hashtag AskLOHeat. We do that after every game, so keep sending them in. We'll be back with a recap of Tuesday night's game tomorrow because we're recording this Monday night, so Tuesday night's game will be up Wednesday morning. And of course, make sure to hit subscribe on iTunes or whatever you use to listen to podcasts. Leave us a rating or review while you're there. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.